Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food on 89.9 KCRW and KCRW.com. Today, making sausage at home. It's a whole lot easier than you might think.
It's sort of like putting on a condom. That's the only other way to describe it.
Jonathan Gold takes us out for Korean noodles.
The broth is so cold that when it comes out, it's almost like noodles in a slushy.
And you'll have an opportunity to support good food and be invited to a feast at Loteria Grill. But first, let's see what's in season at Southern California's farmers markets this week.
This is Laura Avery with the Market Report. I'm joined today here at the market with executive chef Joseph Gillard from Napa Valley Grill in Westwood. And Joseph loves to come to the market. He's looking today in particular for fresh shell beans. Can you describe what kind of beans you're looking for and then the process you have to go through to actually get them onto the plate?
Sure, Laura. Today I noticed that there's quite a bit of offerings on shelling beans. I love the purple runners from Two Peas in a Pod because they're very, very large and they're purple, and flageolets from Rutas. And the process that we actually have to go, we buy them whole in the pot, and that's one of the reasons that I like them as opposed to drying them, you know, for a month or so and then cooking them. They cook a lot differently when they're fresh. So what we do is we buy them, we'll bring them back to the restaurant, and, you know, we'll buy 40, 50 pounds twice a week. And our prep cooks and our dishwashers love it when I bring the product in because they're the ones that actually have to spend the time to take them all out of the shell.
Love it in quotes.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. So basically, they don't look forward to those days after the farmer's market.
So when you cook the beans, is there a method of cooking them separately, and then would you add them to these various dishes, or do you, like, throw them in into the braise, or how do you do that?
That's a great point, because they are all different sizes. What we will do is we will cook them separately, or essentially what we'll do is we'll start out with the purple runners, since those are so large. We'll braise them with aromatics, a little bit of celery and onion, a little bit of garlic and some herbs, very, very slowly. And, you know, we'll braise them until they're about 75% cooked, and then we'll add the flageolets or the black-eyed peas or something that's a little bit smaller in varying degrees of sizes. You know, the next size bean we'll add, braise those for a certain length of time, and the smallest bean to finish it. And it's kind of a tricky process, but it's really worthwhile, obviously, braise them all together because you get a little bit of all those flavors mixed into the same bean broth. And then what we'll do is we'll actually cool them in the broth, and then we will reheat the beans, obviously. We'll reserve them at the restaurant on pickup a la minute with some of the reserve broth and some additional you know, herbs and spices, maybe a little lemon verbena, because we'll be doing it with a halibut dish. And I love that flavor, that delicate lemon verbena flavor with the beans as well.
Can you share that halibut dish with us then, that how you would prepare that?
I would love to share that. You know, halibut obviously is a sustainable wild fish. We just love it. We use it in season, you know, all the way March through November. And we'll, you know, we'll probably roast it. I love roasting halibut. I like the flavor that it gets and that good crust that you can get. And we'll do it with the shell bean ragu. I'll probably use some heirloom, roast some heirloom peppers from Windrose Farms, our friends over here at the market. Probably some of their torpedo onions and some of my lemon verbena from my friends at Little Farm.
That was executive chef Joseph Gillard from Napa Valley Grill in Westwood, and he's at the market every week and sharing wonderful recipes for these terrific fresh shell beans. There has been a lot of talk about goji berries, mainly in health circles. And goji berries are a very rare berry that are just now starting to be grown in California. One of our farmers, Harry Nicholas, is going to be bringing in goji berries on what's called a second certificate. He will be carrying them in for another farmer, which we do allow in a case where it's something that we would like to get that we just can't get any other way. We found out about these goji berries from our inveterate researcher, David Karp. And David, you're here today to explain to us a little bit about what is the big deal with these goji berries. You've been to the farm, you've tasted these. Describe to us what they taste like.
They're about the size of a small to medium blueberry, but they're elongated. They're deep, deep orange. They range in texture from almost crunchy to slightly mushy, depending on ripeness. They sometimes have a little green stem attached. Their flavor, though, is when underripe, is almost tomatoey, slightly vegetable, but at their best, they're a combination of persimmon, rose, and maybe red pepper. They've got a slightly spicy aftertaste. They're actually much better than I thought they would be, having tasted the dried fruit, which is what's mostly available, imported from China, where it's native and has been grown for thousands of years. The actual grower of this product is Charles Garrigus. Chuck Garrigus, he's 47 years old, and if the name is familiar at all, that's because his grandfather was the longtime poet laureate of California from 1966 till 2000 when he died. Charles is an organic grower of Thompson raisin grapes, And he's also got 3 acres under bird netting, which is indispensable to this crop.
And they're sold in the little raspberry punnets or what, or by the pound or
they're
what?
Plastic clamshells.
Okay.
He's saying that they're 10 ounces. I would think that it actually, well, maybe they're so dense in weight that they actually are, but they're $6.50. That's the most expensive gojis I've ever seen, but it's also the cheapest because it's the first time I've ever seen them offered for sale.
And fresh.
Fresh, dried, dime a dozen, you can get those.
Yeah.
But fresh goji berries, and they're good.
Yeah, and what is the season? How long will we have them?
Garriga started picking a little over a month ago, and he'll have them through the end of September.
And Harry Nicholas will be selling them here at the Wednesday and Saturday Santa Monica and Sunday Beverly Hills, I assume.
Excellent.
That was David Karp, and he's been doing this wonderful research on the goji berries, and we have found a California grower who will be sending them in through a grower who comes to our markets. We're very excited about it. One of the things that's so amazing about KCRW, just like the farmer's market, is it's a pay-as-you-go kind of a proposition. We get to come to the market every single week. We get to see our farmers, buy our favorite produce, look forward to next year, catch up with stories from the farmers. It's the same thing with KCRW, listening to the shows. I look forward to the shows. And we're really hoping that right now, everyone who's listening to this show, who loves the farmer's market, who loves good food, and who wants to help out their favorite radio station, will just take a minute to pause, pick up the phone, get in the queue, hang on, and pledge your support for KCRW to keep this wonderful programming coming your way. We sure appreciate you helping us out and pledging your support for good food on KCRW. For The Market Report, this is Laura Avery.
Pictures and recipes from The Market Report are at kcrw.com/goodfood. You'll notice that Good Food is a little bit shorter this week. That's because we're in the middle of our summer pledge drive, that time of year when we ask you, our listeners, to support the programming you love here on KCRW. And along with the great t-shirts, mugs, and other premiums, I've got something really special for you. I want to throw you a dinner party. I'll be hosting an exclusive dinner just for members who support us now. If you support KCRW with a donation of $75 or more, you'll be invited to a special dinner at Loteria Grill. We have a Herradura tequila tasting and a big feast planned. For those who donate under $75, I'll invite you to a special coffee and dessert party at Church and State in downtown LA. It's a great way to celebrate good food and support KCRW. Donate online at kcrw.com/join. You don't need to worry if you don't call or join during Good Food. Just be sure to add the words Good Food in the comment section of the online form. This opportunity is available only until September 7th. And of course, when you join KCRW, you'll be entered to win that great Subaru Outback. Another way to support KCRW is by becoming an angel at the $500 level. You'll receive 5 cookbooks chosen by me throughout the year. The latest Cookbook Club selection is Sausage by Victoria Wise. Believe it or not, making sausage at home really isn't that difficult. To prove it to you, here's Ken Albala. He's a food historian at the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. His latest book is The Lost Art of Real Cooking. He says that sausage is actually pretty easy.
Yes, and it's so much fun, and it's so easy. And listen, you don't need any equipment whatsoever. Buy a little piece of shoulder meat, which sometimes they call country ribs, or you can buy a shoulder roast. And you don't need to start with a lot. You know, buy 2 or 3 pounds. Get a good sharp knife. Partially freeze the meat just so it's firm and not slippery. And then just chop it up as finely as you can get. Into slices first, and then chop it by hand into a coarse sort of mix. Add salt. I would add just in that much. I would add maybe an eighth of a teaspoon of Instacure number 1, which is the nitrates, just to give it that lovely pink color and the snap. And then add seasonings, add pepper, add fennel, whatever you want, oregano. And get yourself an ordinary funnel. In fact, the one that I use, I bought in an automotive store because it had a nice nice wide opening. You know, so it wasn't like this tiny little funnel for liquids. It's clearly meant for motor oil, I think. But then you take the casing, you tie it at one end. You can buy those online. Some supermarkets will sell them to you because they often make their sausages there. And then you put the casing over the end of the funnel. And I can't, gosh, how do I describe this act? It's sort of like putting on a condom. That's the only other way to describe it. And then you stuff the meat in by hand. And it's, you know, you need no equipment. You can tie it off with a string and those are ready to go. Anything you want. You can poach them very quickly and then throw them on the grill. You can smoke them, which is really just lovely. The smoke it's in, it takes maybe a half an hour to give them the flavor. You can throw them in a stew. You know, if you're making like a rice dish or a stew that includes beans or something, a couple of those sausages are just, it's marvelous. The amazing thing, I think, is the cost. I think it's about $2.99 for pork shoulder in my neighborhood, which means that I'm spending $6 for a meal that will feed a lot of, you know, four or five people maybe. And that's it, you know, whereas the package that of sausages that much would cost, you know, a lot more.
Can you also order beef bungs from a catalog? What are they?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was mistaken at first about what it ought to be. I thought it was a large intestine, and I knew it was the kind of casing that they use for bologna and for really wide sausages. And when the thing arrived, there were warning labels all over it. It came in a little sort of canister sealed very well. And there were warnings about the odor and that it would have a noxious odor, but be sure that you put it back in the fridge. And I thought, okay, I'll give it a shot. And when I opened the thing, it was actually closed at one end. So this is not an intestine through which things go in a cow. But it was like one of the many stomachs within the cow that they talk about with a closed end. And I found out after doing a little research on this that it's where the word cul-de-sac comes from. You know, like when you go into a circle, that a road that doesn't have an exit. This is basically the cul, you know, the part of the cow's guts. De sac, it's a big sack. And it was enormous. Like, you could have put like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 pound. You could put a cat in there. I mean, anything. It just occurred to me and what was really neat about it also is I've been stuffing sausages, either fresh ones or for drying for like salami, for quite a while now. And they generally, you need a funnel to do that. I mean, just the opening is fairly small and you basically wrap the stuffing up around the funnel end and then you cram it in with your fingers. And actually, I don't have any machines. I like the idea of just using hands for everything. But what made the beef bungs so fun is I could literally just take the ground, the chopped meat, I actually use a knife, and just put it in by hand. And it took me, I don't know, 20 seconds to stuff two enormous 5-pound sausages. And I actually would have done the whole thing at once, but I keep all this stuff in my wine fridge, which is like a nice, it's about 55, 60 degrees in temperature and nice humidity. So they won't dry out too much. People have warned me, oh, you need to be very careful about case hardening because if the outside of the sausage dries before the inside, it can go bad, without the. But so far, they look just wonderful. And they've only been in there for a couple of weeks and they're starting to take on the white mold, which is intentional. You want, you know, when you buy like an artisanal salami, it's got this lovely white mold that's pretty much the same that you find out on the outside of brie and things. I encourage that. I actually, you know, keep a couple of salamis from the last batch in there, even if they're old, just to replicate the mold. And that sort of acts as a barrier around the skin.
How can you be sure when you're curing a fresh sausage that you don't end up with a moldy mess?
Well, the first thing is you have to begin to learn to love nitrates. I know this sounds really scary to people because, you know, they've been warned against nitrates and such, I think disingenuously. In fact, if you go into Trader Joe's or one of the supermarkets and you see something that says nitrate free on a package of bacon or hot dogs or cured sausages, it's just a lie. In fact, the nitrates are there. They come from celery juice, which is concentrated, and it is a natural source of nitrates, yes, but it is nitrates nonetheless. And I think Nyman Ranch is the only company that actually says now from a natural celery juice or something to that effect. But the beautiful thing about nitrates, I know this is going to sound odd, is that they give the meat this lovely red color, like that very deep sort of firm textured red color, and they prevent botulism. So that's, you don't have to worry about that in the sausage.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much for such a great conversation, Ken.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Ken Albala's book is The Lost Art of Real Cooking. I've got a recipe for homemade sausage at kcrw.com/goodfood. Up next, Jonathan Gold's here with a restaurant for us to try. This is Good Food, and I'm Evan Kleiman. There are so many things that make Good Food unlike any other show. We've got the Market Report, our videos, the iPhone app, and of course, Jonathan Gold. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning food writer for the LA Weekly who joins us here every week. So, Jonathan, where are we going today?
Koreatown.
And what are we going to eat?
Korean noodles, oddly enough.
Oh, I love Korean noodles.
But today we're talking about a specific kind of noodles, as we're in the middle of the hottest part of the summer. I think possibly the single most refreshing food that it's possible to eat on a hot day is Korean naengmyeon, which is a cold noodle that comes either in a broth or in a sort of chili sauce. It's like sticking your head into an ice bath. It's just great.
What's the name of the restaurant?
My favorite place for naengmyeon is called Yuchun. And it specializes in a slightly different kind of naengmyeon. Naengmyeon is usually made with buckwheat or with sweet potatoes or a mixture of buckwheat and sweet potatoes. It's a North Korean thing. The ones at Yuchun are made with something they call chik, which is arrowroot or probably more precisely the ground root from the kudzu plant, the one that everybody in the South is always trying to eradicate with chainsaws.
They should have an Asian noodle factory in the South somewhere and throw all the kudzu that way.
That's a really good idea. They could benefit mankind while ridding themselves of a pesky thorny vine.
Yeah. So how is the texture of that kind of noodle different?
The texture of naengmyeon tends to be pretty stretchy, but the chik naengmyeon is very stretchy, and it's dark. It's almost black. When the waitress comes over and asks you if you want her to cut the noodles into manageable lengths, which you probably do, you know, she doesn't take like a petite thing of scissors or even kitchen things. These look like garden shears, the things that the things that you would use to like prune your rose bushes with.
I love that image.
The mul naengmyeon, the naengmyeon that comes in the soup, is a well-known dish at a lot of places in Koreatown.
When the noodles are in the cold soup, the broth then is also cold.
Yes, the broth is very cold. In fact, at Yuchun, the broth is so cold that when it comes out, it's almost like a bowl of slush. It's almost like noodles in a slushy, and the slushy broth actually rises slightly above the plane of the noodles.
That's so interesting. Is it sort of like eating, you know, when I think of eating aspic, it's like eating meat jello. So is this sort of like eating a meat slushy?
It could be like eating meat slushy.
Because the broth is meat-based, yes?
Yes, it's very, very meat-based. But there's also a sweet and a sour element to it. And there's a little bit of Korean hot mustard in there, probably a little bit of sesame. Again, the compositions of the broths are very proprietary, whereas a lot of places that have the naengmyeon, the broth is very sort of beef boiled for 10 hours longer than it should be tasting. This is very fresh and very refreshing.
So interesting. Is there anything else in it besides the broth and the noodles?
There's usually a half-boiled egg. There are a few slices of very well-done beef and some slivers of Korean pear, among other things.
Wow. Is Korean pear the same as, quote, Asian pear?
Pretty much. The one thing that I think is interesting, that even when you're going there on a 100-degree day, and this place is packed on a 100-degree day, they set down your slushy suit in front of you. The waitress will also bring you a like little mug of hot broth that's like heavily peppered. And it always reminds me of like the St. Bernards bringing, you know, the hot soup to the people trapped in the Alpine passes. As if the soup is, if in just in case you're like too cooled down by the cold soup, here's some warm soup to get you back up to temperature.
So you don't get a brain freeze that lasts too long.
I will admit that the first time I was there was the first time I've ever gotten brain freeze from a bowl of soup.
That's hilarious.
Their restaurant, Yuchun, is also known for its mandu. They have giant dumplings, steamed dumplings that are filled with like a mince of meat and kimchi that are very good.
Mm. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
We've been talking about Yuchun on Olympic near Western in Koreatown. Get a text message with the exact address, and you can receive a text each week with the new restaurant info by simply texting the words good food to 69866. That's good food to 69866. And all of Jonathan Gold's restaurant suggestions are on the Good Food Restaurant Map, which is on our blog at kcrw.com/goodfood. I'm joined now by Stacy Hunt here in the studio. She's a sommelier, and she comes to us from Duvin Wine and Spirits and Splash Productions. She's put together a special two-bottle wine club premium. So this year's selections are kind of unusual.
Yes. Today, for this package, I selected two wines from two little-known regions. One, Portugal. Although being in the top 10 in terms of wine producing, most people think of it in terms of port wine and not red, dry table wine.
So talk to us about this selection in particular that you're bringing us from Portugal.
Okay. This is called Vale do Bonfim, and it's from the Upper Douro Valley. And this is an area that makes grows a lot of grapes for port wine. And in fact, the winemaker and winery is the Symington family, and they are the purveyors of the Douro brand of port, which is a famous brand of port. But they're making this table wine that is, I would call it Napa medium. Not Napa light, but Napa medium.
What do you mean by that?
It isn't as alcoholic as Napa. It's 14%, 13.5%. Whereas Napa is more towards 14.5% to 17%. It also isn't as fruit-y because the grapes used are not the highly fruited grapes that we just automatically get in California because of our great soil and heat. It's, I would say, a Napa Valley tasting wine in terms of its modernity, in terms of its richness, in terms of its fruitiness.
But less of a bomb.
Less of a bomb, much softer. And it's got a real smooth character, so it knows how to take a chill. You could put a little ice on this and not be unhappy with it, treating it like a Grenache or like a Pinot.
So you mentioned that it would be good for the season. So does that mean that it's good for a lot of foods that we think of during summer where we're grilling a lot and having barbecue?
Yeah, I would think of this as outside food, anything that you can eat outside. Take it with you outside. This is the bottle that should go in your pocket.
So that's the Portuguese selection. You said you had another wine for us from an equally interesting region. Where is that one from?
Corsica.
Oh, I don't know that we've ever talked about a Corsican wine.
Likely not. It sits right off the coast of Italy and near Sardinia, which is the other island there. And Sardinia is Italian, and Corsica is a French outpost. This wine is a local grape, which people are familiar with probably hearing the name. It's Vermentino. I would call this grape kind of like a person that's very impressionable. And you know how there are some people that are impressionable and they kind of suck in and take in everything around them and they are enriched by it. Well, Vermentino is like that. And it's enriched by its wild environment and its wild hills and landscape of Corsica.
So is there a lot of minerality in the wine?
A lot of minerality and herbs and the ones we want. The thyme and the lavender and those types of flavors in it.
What is the name of the wine?
Oh, I'm sorry. The wine is called Domaine Mastracci. And then the actual bottle that we have is called Eprove.
It's so interesting. It's interesting that it's Domaine Mastracci. So it's like
That's that. That's
French and Italian. So I wonder if they would say a prove or a prove.
Interestingly enough, I did ask, and I wanted to say a prove, and because you and I are bent in that way, but they said, no, a prove.
Wow, interesting. So this, of course, is a white wine. What do you see eating with this?
Well, I've tried it with a couple of different things. I actually tried it with lobster, and surprisingly, it was very good. I thought it might not work, but it's got the kind of weight that you think of for lobster. And also, it's got some nice sweetness, which paired with the lobster, but it's dry. I also had it with all the usual suspects, but in particular, I had it with a cheeseless pizza. And that was kind of a test that I wanted to see what would happen. And it gave a lot of interest to sort of the grilled tomato and vegetable that was on the pizza. And it didn't have any cheese to kind of worry about cutting through. So it did a really nice job with that. I would also obviously have it with any piece of fish I found, you know, that was fresh and on the market.
Mm, yum. Well, I think people will be excited by these two wines. They sound very complimentary.
They are, and they're not, you know, they're not just the run-of-the-mill. They're something to experiment with, to widen your taste, and to live well while doing good.
Thank you very much, Stacy.
Thanks, Evan. Love being here.
Find details on the wines Stacy mentioned at kcrw.com/goodfood. Join KCRW now to get the two-bottle KCRW Wine Club Premium Package. Call 800-600-5279 or go to kcrw.com/join. You know that you can download past episodes and subscribe to the podcast at kcrw.com/goodfood. You can also download the PieCast there, too. It's a special bonus podcast all about pie. This week, you can hear about Larchmont Grill's mixed summer berry pie. Good Food is produced and edited by Harriet Ells with Bob Carlson, Candace Moyer, Jillian Ferguson, Connie Alvarez, and Laurel Garcia. Jennifer Farrow is our consulting producer. Thanks to Gary Masiha, Ronnie Nicholson, and Becky Nelson. I'm Evan Kleiman, and I'll see you back here next week for a full hour of Good Food. And please, think about what KCRW and Good Food means to you. Show us your support by listening as a member. Go to kcrw.com/join now.